It's Sunday morning, and that wonderfully relaxed feeling of a long, lazy day lingers in the air. If you want to make the moment last, may I suggest the perfect solution? The Martin Sheen Podcast. Join me, your host, Martin Sheen, for beautifully crafted 20-minute programs filled with never-before-heard stories of my life, along with personal reflections and poetry that inspires. The Martin Sheen Podcast is the perfect Sunday refresh, a chance to take a deep breath, relax, and know that the stress of Monday may be just around the corner, but not here, not now. So make this your weekly moment of calm as we explore faith, hope, love, and what it means to be human. And know this, this journey is ever unfolding as I invite you to see what's next with me, Martin Sheen, and thank you.
MSW Media.
Spy Talk, a podcast at the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, national security, and military operations.
Hi there, I'm Jeff Stein, and this is Spy Talk. There are friendly nations, but no friendly intelligence services goes an old saw in the spy business. What that means in practicality is that we have close intelligence relationships with our allies, but in many cases we also spy on each other, not entirely trusting what they're telling us. In no place is this convoluted arrangement better exemplified than in the security relationship between the U.S. and Israel, who have a long history of snooping on each other while closely working together on mutual targets like Iran and its allied militias, Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Houthis in Yemen, and now Hamas, of course, in Gaza. Here to discuss that with me today is my old friend and colleague, Jonathan Broder. He's been in and out of the Middle East for decades, in particular Israel, whose struggles and wars he began covering many decades ago as a foreign correspondent for the Associated Press and Chicago Tribune, based in Tel Aviv. He's also been a foreign policy editor and writer for Congressional Quarterly and Newsweek. And today we're blessed to have him as a contributing editor at Spy Talk, where he's written a number of very shrewd pieces since the Hamas invasion of Israel last October 7th. Jonathan Broder, welcome to Spy Talk, or I should say welcome back to Spy Talk. And frankly, this is kind of this is kind of conversation we would usually have over cocktails at my kitchen table or out in the back deck in the summertime. It's a conversation we're always talking about, especially since last October 7th, the U.S. and Israel. What a problematic relationship. And of course, we always take the intelligence angle in, and we're very interested in the intelligence relationship between the U.S. and Israel. And I'll start by, you know, repeating that hoary old oath. There are friendly countries, but there are no friendly intelligence services. So we've had this contradictory relationship with the Israelis all along, haven't we?
Yeah, it's a very complicated relationship, to say the least.
It's complicated because we don't entirely trust the Israelis. Of course, we don't entirely trust any ally, and our NSA, National Security Agency, antennas and other means are always eavesdropping even on allies, and that includes Israel. We've been eavesdropping on them forever. But that is a very complicated relationship. It's part of the overall contradictions in relationship where, according to the leaker Edward Snowden, the U.S. and Israel have the tightest possible intelligence relationship, but at the same time, Israel is one of the greatest counterintelligence threats to us. Isn't that right?
That's right. According to these documents that were released by Snowden back in 2013, Israel was identified as the third most targeted country in terms of spying on the NSA monitoring Israeli communications, Sigil communications, Israel was considered the third most dangerous threat to U.S. security after Russia and China.
Of course, Israelis deny all this. We're just all friends. We lovey-dovey each other. No problem. Let's talk about some of the major incidents in the U.S. and Israeli intelligence relations. There was the Pollard affair, for example. Jonathan Pollard, who is a U.S. Navy intelligence analyst who was being run as a spy by the Israelis and was caught.
Yes, this was back in 1988. Pollard was, as you said, a U.S. Navy intelligence analyst, and he downloaded and provided to the Israelis literally thousands of documents, highly classified documents. They could have filled up an entire room up to the ceiling. And he not only provided them to Israel, but he also sold them to South Africa, a few other countries. And the Israelis took some of that information and traded it with the Russians in order to secure the release of Jews from the Soviet Union.
So the Israel took classified U.S. secrets supplied by their spy, Jonathan Pollard, really high-level intelligence, and gave it to Moscow as a bargaining chip to get Jews out of the Soviet Union.
Yes, and some of this information included sources and methods, which is really the sort of the crown jewels of U.S. intelligence. And it was considered probably the worst breach of U.S. intelligence probably up until now.
Until the next spies came along, until the next moles were discovered.
Yeah.
So, and this we might say was the decade of the spy, when Russian moles were discovered in the FBI and CIA and so forth and so on. Anyway, the Israelis, when they were caught, what did they say? I'm sorry? Never happened again?
Well, yeah. They in the beginning, they denied it. But then they finally acknowledged it, apologized, and promised that they would never spy again. But in fact, what happened was the Israelis continued to spy on the United States and to this day continue to. But the spying has become much more subtle, more cautious, and more sophisticated. So, for example, it's not so much using human intelligence the way Pollard was used as an asset, but what they'll do is they'll invite people over for academic conferences. They will bug their rooms. They will try to suborn them. They use these kind of methods. A lot of it is economic intelligence, industrial intelligence, because Israel has industries, particularly their defense industry, which compete with the United States. So they need this information.
Right. Yeah. As you know, we've talked about this before, and I've reported this in the past, that this information has been corroborated many times over by other former high-ranking FBI counterintelligence officials. They've all said the same thing, that they had to call the Israelis on the rug about every 6 months to say, cut the shit, meaning they caught them trying to steal U.S. technical secrets. So
yes,
this is ongoing.
Right. But at the same time, it's interesting. At the same time, the Mossad and the CIA and the NSA and the Israeli Signals Intelligence Unit 8200 have extremely close relationships. I'm told that the Mossad has a station inside CIA headquarters in Langley. And among the documents that were released by Snowden was an actual document showing an agreement between the NSA and Unit 8200, in which the NSA agrees to provide Israel with raw intelligence, including the names of U.S. citizens.
Mm. U.S. citizens that were we? What more do we know about that? How they would use U.S. Information on U.S. citizens?
We don't really know that much about it. All we know is that we've seen the text of the agreement, and what Israel does with that information is anyone's.
Mm-hmm. We might conclude that this is information on U.S. persons who have affiliations or ties to terrorist groups in the Middle East.
I would assume that would be the case.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, it reminds me of the Mad Magazine Spy versus Spy, you know, famous graphic and where they're holding knives behind their backs.
Yes.
So that's kind of the relationship now. So especially in the strained relationship between Bibi Netanyahu and President Biden, we can expect that NSA is really trying to listen to the cell phones of Netanyahu or otherwise overhear his war cabinet discussions.
Yes, that's very true. And I think that all of this, the relationship between U.S. administrations and Bibi Netanyahu go back way before the current relationship between Netanyahu and Biden. So, for example, during the administration of Obama, when Obama was secretly negotiating with Iran for the Iranian nuclear agreement, this goes back to 2013, the Americans found out through monitoring Netanyahu's conversations that Israeli spies had found out about these secret negotiations and were planning to leak the information in order to turn opponents of the negotiations and any agreement with Iran in Congress, particularly Republicans, to get them to mobilize against these negotiations and against any agreement.
I'm going to make a huge jump here and say that they probably got that intelligence from friends on the Hill. Israel has some very close friends in Congress, in the Senate, in the House. And it wouldn't be beyond them to leak sensitive intelligence to the Israelis if they thought it was something that was detrimental to the Israelis or against Israeli wishes. And that would have included the Iran negotiations.
Well, that is a possibility. But you have to remember that the administration was keeping these talks secret also from Congress. So one has to assume that the Israelis picked this up by their own spying.
Well, we have to take a quick break. When we get back, though, can you tell us what we know about Israel's electronic surveillance and intelligence gathering capabilities?
As I said before, the Israeli spying continued after Pollard, but it became much more cautious. And what I mean by that was they didn't so much use or try to suborn American officials to spy, in other words, human intelligence, they used electronic intelligence. Mm. The Israelis are believed to have a device. I believe it's called Stingray, but in any case, it's a device that mimics a cell phone tower. So when somebody uses their cell phone in Washington, over at the State Department or at the White House or at the Energy Department, this device that the Israelis use pick up these conversations as a cell phone tower would, and they can download the entire contents of somebody's cell phone.
Mm. I reported on this many years ago when you and I were together at Congressional Quarterly, and I first began the Spy Talk column. I broke a story about these stingrays that were popping up, that U.S. counterintelligence was finding popping up around downtown Washington. And one of the targets would be these lawyers' offices who represent foreign entities in particular, or law offices that had tight relationships with the White House and Congress and so on. And so, you know, law firms weren't all buttoned up electronic in terms of their electronic security. So the way to find out what was going on in the White House or Congress was to listen in on these lawyers' phones by placing these portable devices around K Street, Lafayette Square, and so on to overhear American communications about American policy toward the Middle East in particular.
Right.
So, do you think we know what Netanyahu is thinking? Let's go back to October 7th. We were as surprised as the Israeli leadership about the October 7th Hamas offensive and slaughtering of civilians. So by depending on Israeli communications, we might have been totally surprised by that ourselves.
Yes. I mean, I think that we've learned that Hamas was not a primary target for the United States. Of course, it was for Israel.
Because Hamas wasn't targeting the United States.
Exactly. And
unlike Hezbollah.
Yes. We had very good intelligence on Hezbollah because they were targeting the United States. But Hamas was considered more of a local Israeli issue or an Israeli threat, a threat to Israel. So what we did was we basically outsourced our collection of intelligence on Hamas to the Israelis. And the Israelis shared their information with us. But as we know, the Israelis totally misread the intelligence that they were gathering on Hamas. They knew about this plan to attack Israel a year before it took place, but they simply didn't believe that Hamas had the capacity to pull it off.
These were lower level intelligence analysts and so on who were stitching this information together,
right?
And shoveling it upstairs. But somewhere there was a break in the chain of information.
Well, what happened was is that at the upper levels of Israeli military intelligence and the Shin Bet, the domestic security service, the leaders of those organizations simply didn't believe that, as I said, that Hamas had the capacity to pull off this plan.
Or the intention.
Well, they had the intention, but not the capacity.
Hmm. I mean, it's almost like the deception operation that the Allies, led by Eisenhower, pulled off against the Nazis on the eve of the Normandy invasion. You know, deception operations to make them think they were invading at the Pas-de-Calais. Instead of Normandy and so forth, they created this fake, tank corps made out of plywood to be photographed by German flights and so on. And so Hamas practiced a very good, and this is very much part of the intelligence world, of course, is deception.
Sure.
Psychological warfare. So they lulled the Israelis. The Israelis wanted to hear that Hamas was tending to governance in Gaza. And they knew that, so they fed him that line that, yeah, we're very happy with the financial aid and so on, and we're concentrating on, civil governance in Gaza. We don't have any, aggressive plans toward you anymore.
But that was part of it, but I think the more apt comparison is not so much the World War II comparison, although that is part of it, but it would be the Israeli intelligence failure in 1973 when the Egyptians and the Syrians were holding exercises near the Suez Canal and the Golan Heights, respectively, and they would bring troops up to the canal and then bring them back and then bring them up again and then bring them back. And they just did these continued exercises. And when they finally did the real thing, the Israelis believed it was an exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what the interpretation was of the exercises that the Israelis watched the Hamas militants carrying out inside the Gaza Strip in broad daylight.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, we've heard in the news recently the U.S. is, we have this really contradictory, it seems to most people, policy towards Israel. I dare say the man on the street, the woman on the street who's trying to follow U.S.-Israeli relationship in regard to Gaza right now, totally confused what we're doing. First of all, at one time we announced we're stopping arms shipments, and then no, we're continuing arms shipments. I expect that the folks at CIA headquarters, NSA headquarters, and their counterparts in Israel, Shin Bet and Mossad and so on, just are throwing up their hands and saying, well, we'll just keep our heads down and go ahead with our intelligence work. And all this other stuff is, happening way up in the clouds.
Yes. I mean, there's always a political dimension to the relationship. with an election coming up here in the United States later this year, and with lots of protests against the war in Gaza and the huge civilian casualty toll, Biden is concerned. So he has to show that he is doing something to try to restrain the Israelis. So what he's done is he has halted a shipment of these big 2,000-pound bombs that the Israelis have been using to bomb Gaza. And that one of the reasons that the casualty toll is so high is that they've been using these bombs to take down entire city blocks in Gaza. Mm-hmm. At the same time, however, the United States is still committed to provide Israel with $3.8 billion every year for the next 10 years under an agreement of military aid. In addition to that, there was a recent supplemental foreign aid bill that was passed that gives Israel, in addition to that $3.8 billion, another $17 billion in aid, military aid. So both of those things are going on at the same time.
From your reporting, John, do you think that the intelligence sharing has intensified since October 7th, and we are now training our own intelligence agents and technical capabilities on Hamas and on the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, for that matter, as well?
Yes, I do. I think because this issue is so important and so so immediate, I would imagine that the NSA, I would presume, the NSA is doing what it always does. But but I think that they have, there's always priority targets for the NSA. And I think that waxes and wanes with Israel. But I think right now it's waxing. They are definitely, devoting more resources.
Meanwhile, President Biden would love to be able to wiretap Bibi's cell phone and overhear any conversations he's having on the side. And likewise, Bibi would love to be overhearing any conversation that White House officials are having about Israel and Gaza and so forth.
Exactly.
In other words, the spies are going to be spies. They're going to keep spying. But
exactly.
Overall, we'll continue to have friendly relationships, trust but verify, to coin a phrase.
Yes, exactly. And I think that, you know, of course, the Israelis are well aware that the Americans are trying to listen in. So they probably have taken their own
precautions.
My reporting shows that they've presumably are taking countermeasures to prevent the Americans from listening in.
Well, this won't be the last time we discuss this convoluted relationship between the U.S. and Israel and intelligence issues. John Broder, thanks for bringing your expertise to the Spy Talk podcast. And of course, I'll hear more on this over cocktails at my kitchen table or on the back deck one of these days. So see you around, pal.
Thanks a lot, John.
And that's it for this week's Spy Talk. Be sure to check out our complete podcast archive on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't already, do check out the SpyTalk.co news site on Substack, where we offer a steady diet of scoops and original analyses on the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, and military operations. Just Google SpyTalk and you'll quickly find your way there. This edition of the Spy Talk podcast was smoothly produced, as always, by Kanai and edited by Molly Hawkey for MSW Media. Oh, and that music, it's the soundtrack from Body of Lies, the 2008 thriller starring Leonardo DiCaprio as a CIA agent caught in a web of deception in the Middle East. That's it. See you around. I'm Jeff Stein.
For more original reporting and insights like this, subscribe to SpyTalk.co on Substack and follow us on Twitter at @talk_spy. If you enjoyed our podcast, subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MSW Media.
I'm Brian Karam, and I've spent decades covering politics. Now I'm taking you behind the scenes, one interview at a time.
Join us as each week Brian confronts the issues that matter, posing the questions you wish you could ask. No filter, no agenda, just the truth.
We're not here for sound bites. We're here for substance. Join me, Brian Karam, every week as we cut through the noise and get straight to it. This is Just Ask the Question, where curiosity will lead us to the facts.
Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform. And remember, when you want answers, all you have to do is just ask the question.